This episode of Bend the Knee is brought to you by our bannermen, Lord Jason of House Ross, Sir Jimmy of House Nuts, Master of the Web, Lady Dawn of House Wright, Sir Chris of House Farber, Lady Tracy of House Faw, Sir Peter of House Whittingham, Sandy the Dragon, Blood of Queen Daenerys and Lady of Jameson, Lord John of House Fry, Lady Juliana of House Stradley, Sir David of House Fraser, Lady Liz of House Hendricks, Sir Matthew of House Perry, Lady Madeline of House Fritzel, Lady Adrian of House Dillard, Lady Ashley of House Gardner, Lady Lismelin of House Morales.
This episode of Bend the Knee is protected by Sir Ryan of House Turbush, Lady Sarah the Unraveler.
Our current champion is Lady Kira of House Arnold.
Our current Master of Coin is Lord Jason of House Ross.
Squire to Sir Matt, Lady Betsy of House Hudson.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt the Bud Knight.
And I am Sir Ezra the Watchful. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we're into Theon, Six of a Clash of Kings. And I think we have a pretty significant raven to pull up at the end of the show.
Yeah, going to be talking a Lady Rohan Weber theory. Sorry, as I almost stuttered a little bit there when I was doing my intro, because before this, we were talking about how we are almost done. We only have three chapters after this one left of A Clash of Kings. And then we will be moving into A Storm of Swords, which a lot of people think is the best book. Well, because it is. I think it's pretty odd. I think it's once you read A Storm of Swords, you're like, wow, it's by far the best book. It's the best book in the series. But, you know, when we went from A Game of Thrones to A Clash of Kings, we sort of added some titles that sometimes Ez and I will say, right, to our intro. And we were joking beforehand about how we're going to have to make some new ones when we go to a Storm of Swords. And I almost said mine there. But and so I was like, ugh, gotta save that.
Gotta save it. Gotta save it, man. You can't jump the gun here. That's a season three situation.
Haven't earned that title yet. But we will. Oh my. But we should say that you and I did talk about this, obviously off the air. When we finish A Clash of Kings, we're going to take just a little break and dive, just to do a few chapters possibly of the World of Ice and Fire book and cover some Fire and Blood stuff, since obviously House of the Dragon is going to be coming out at some point next year. And just sort of do a refresher, and everybody's looking for that stuff right now anyway, so it kind of works out well. So we will still definitely obviously pick back up with the Storm of Swords, but it'll probably be closer to January, I'm guessing. Yeah. And we'll just kind of finish out this year with some House of the Dragons chapters. Yeah. You know, some stuff that's going to be featured in that TV show.
Yeah, which is cool. It's exciting to get back in there and learn all those names. It's going back in the histories and just a good refresher for everybody. And we're excited that we're getting tidbits here and there, right? We're getting little some images and significant fights between individuals. I think there's going to be, in the show, we're going to have a lot more stuff answered. We're going to see who assassinates who and just more plotting and scheming. It's going to be epic. So it'll be important for us to go back and touch on Fire and Blood.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we are recording today's episode, we're doing live on YouTube. So hey, make sure you guys are subscribed and got that bell notification on over on YouTube, because you never know when we're gonna go live. Trust me, because we don't always know when we're gonna go live.
We don't know when we're going live. Oh my gosh. No, this is actually kind of cool. So if you hear Sir Ezra like looking around, or you come onto the YouTube, or you just think I'm a little bit off like I normally am, I guess, maybe a bit more so because I got a lot of stuff going on in front of me. I'm trying to figure it all out. It's like a new toy. You know, it's like you're in a new car and you got these gadgets to play with.
Shout out to StreamYard, because this is pretty fun. You know, we use Zoom and we like Zoom, but Zoom doesn't give you sort of the stuff just for going live that this gives us. And so this is pretty fun, because it's already saved us a lot of work that we would normally do in post-production. So
dang straight. Yeah. Dang straight. Yeah, actually, it's well worth it. Also, let's do some updates here. Okay. So first of all, Sir Ezra is back from Germany, the whole thing. I've been out there. I got a large batch of time where I'm gonna be back doing our thing here, recording these episodes, moving ahead in A Clash of Kings. But we have tonight, we're recording this prior to, so if you're watching live on YouTube, we have Bannerman Hangout. Got that tonight. Gonna be a big deal. I love those. Enjoy those. We do about one a month. We also have been looking forward to the convention that was promised.
Yes. Right? Hey, Game of Thrones official convention. It's sometime in February. I don't have the exact date off the top of my head. But yeah, I am definitely going. I think I'm just doing general admission. There are a handful of tiers that you can get, and like the top one includes a dance party that is DJ'd by Hodor himself. So hold the floor, because that's what he's doing. Because he's gonna be out there dancing. It's like $1,000. It's pretty ridiculous. But I will not be. Yeah, I don't look at that. Sir Jimmy, obviously, our good friend Sir Jimmy was he said he's planning on he's going, man. And then we were talking about some of the packages and stuff, some of the things you get. But I think I'm just doing general admission. I don't think I need anything more than that. I just kind of want to. I don't really care about panels or any of that stuff. I just kind of want to go around and talk to people. I like to talk to the people who are there, like in costume and stuff like that. I don't necessarily need to talk to the actors or anything like that.
Well, in case folks want to know who is going to be there, right? You've got Isaac Wright, Bran Stark, Daniel Portman, Podrick Payne. We've got Yara is going to be there. Hodor, Christian. Let's see who else. Jack Gleason, Joffrey, Alfie Allen, Theon. Which today, Theon chapter. But let me see if I can find these tiers. Where are the? Yeah, the Iron Throne, Dragon, Direwolf, Raven, are the packages, right? So I think,
right.
Which one is it? The one that's got everything in it. It's the Iron Throne. Right? Yeah.
Yes.
I think it's the Iron Throne. It's $989 for Iron Throne Pass. If you want, you could also go $14.89 for the Iron Throne First Row Pass. That's also available. So anyway, looks kind of cool. But so what's all in here? You've got like reserve seats, in-person autographs, panels, exclusive panels, priority lines, photos. You've got exclusive Friday night dinner after the convention, evening dance party with our DJ, with our Hodor DJ. Pretty cool. I mean, this is fun.
You think George is going to go?
I'm pretty sure this is the convention where he said he's going to announce Winds of Winter.
The book that was promised.
Yeah, the book that was promised. So,
maybe he'll tell us a chapter from the book, but tell us we're not allowed to tell anyone. Because what happens in Vegas
stays in Vegas. Yeah, that would be wild. Well, I mean, here's the thing: he changes those chapters anyways. I don't even know with George. We can get into that now. So that there you go, friends. Here's that's the con that was promised. We're going. Matt's
we will
going,
be going.
I'm going.
The right. Bannerman. We will also be going to the one that I think is then like a month away after that, or 2 months after. I think it's maybe April. Is Ice and Fire Con?
Ice and Fire Con. Yeah, yeah.
I bought my tickets 2 years ago.
Is that still in Ohio? Right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and your 2020 tickets are kept.
Nice,
because of COVID, right? It shut down, and then they said no again. So they're still going. And I think for that one, they did message and say that if you want to go to that, you do have to have COVID vaccine certification, which I have.
Yeah.
So you know.
Yeah.
So it's good. Here you go. Here's my card. Boom. Get you in.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know about this, the Game of Thrones one, but either way, it's fine. I'm going.
Buddy,
we're walking around. We're gonna be walking around talking to people.
Here's the thing: I want to just meet some folks. I'd love if you're a listener to the show or just other people who are fans there and want to talk about Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon, the whole nine yards. I would love to just do that, and I think it'd be a blast. But I will warn folks: if you've been into the Bannerman Zoom hangouts, you know. There's different versions of Ez. All right. Sir Ezra the Watchful.
Wow.
He's not always so watchful.
Here we go.
Okay.
Here we go.
Sometimes you have, you know, White Claw Ez. Sometimes you have Long Island Ez. And sometimes you have Long Island Ez in Vegas. And I don't know who that guy is yet. So it should be a lot of fun. Matt knows.
Yeah, let me tell you guys something. You know, when in season three, when Ez becomes, you know, Lord of the Long Island, I mean,
the Lord of Long Island. Oh gosh.
Known for their iced teas.
Right, right. Better than Arbor Gold, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
But
awesome. Awesome. Okay. Well, Ez, let's go ahead. We do have a little bit of news here. Saw this was kind of interesting. And you know what? I did it again, man. I shut it down. Gosh, what am I doing here?
What's going on? It's got us all jumbled.
It does. It does have us all jumbled here. Well, it's because it was on Facebook. I was on Facebook and then somebody messaged me, you know. So on the Game of Thrones Facebook page, okay, mm-hmm. This is the, you know, this is the running around you have to do. Okay, so on October 20th, which was Wednesday, I believe, they just post stuff and it's like, hey, here's Daenerys, and they list all her titles. It's just a few pictures, right? But this interesting little tidbit has been pointed out. Game of Thrones, October 20th, they post three pictures of Jon Snow. Lord Snow, 998th Lord Commander of the Night's Watch, King of the North, the Bastard of Winterfell, the prince that was promised.
Yeah.
That is actually something that was never officially sort of stated.
I thought it was the princess that was promised, man. That's as far as we've gotten in the books. I don't know that we know who the prince is, right? I mean, are they trying to tell us that?
Well, the princess promise is supposed to come and save us from a potential long night and evil and darkness.
I thought that was Arya.
Well, I don't know. Arya killed the Night King. Jon stabbed Dany.
Is she the darkness? Wow.
Wow.
Wow. People are just raging. People hate that so much. My gosh. So is it confirmed? I mean, you said this. George is working for him. So maybe, right? George is working for HBO.
Working with HBO? No, yeah.
Got the big contract. Got the big dollar amount. He said, did you see on Not a Blog what he said the other day? First of all, two things. I don't know if you can pull that up. He mentioned something about what are his teams? The Jets and the Giants, right? He's into football. Right.
He's both they're New not York doing, teams, yeah.
Yeah, they're not they doing well, suck. Right? They both suck right now, right? And it's just like that was the fuel. Like he says he's so busy. He's like, I'm so busy, I'm working on this project, that project, and so on. And it's so nice on the weekend for Sunday for him just to, you know, relax and kind of get uplifted. I think he used the words like he enjoyed the positive vibe. Well, when one of his teams wins, right, he gets some energy from that. He gets a boost.
Wow, he's not getting any energy this year.
So I'm or worried that's going to affect, year. Right? I think it's affecting Winds of Winter. I think it's actually.
You know what? Oh, my God. It all makes sense now.
Yeah.
Do you know when Winds of Winter was released? Or Dance of Dragons was released? 2011.
2011, yeah.
Yeah, the last time the New York Giants went to the Super Bowl in 2011. They beat the Patriots. It was the second time they beat them.
Holy smokes.
It's all connected.
God dang it.
Do we have to wait for the Giants or the Jets to be good again before we get another book? My God.
Dude, that's...
Somebody call Eli imagine? Manning because we need him back.
Get
okay?
him back.
I mean, get him back.
Like, it's like either that or we need like the angels in the end zone to show up and start doing something just to get this going, because if this is what he's relying on to get his fuel to go into the week to write, we're screwed.
I gotta look some stuff up here, release dates.
We're never gonna get it, Matt. I mean, we're gonna get, I don't know. We were looking at the deadline. So 2021, we're in October, right? We're recording this on October 23rd, and it's like we're not going to get Winds of Winter this year. Not in 20. It's been a decade, right?
Right.
10 years.
All right, let's see here. So, a Game of Thrones releases in August of 1996. I don't know what was going on with the Jets or the Giants in 96. I think they were both just sort of maybe mediocre. I don't know. A Clash of Kings, 1999. I mean, the Giants were starting to get good there, because then in 2000 we get Storm of Swords. And the Giants did go to the Super Bowl in 2000. So they lost to the Baltimore Ravens. 2005, that's when they drafted Eli. That was Eli's first year, right? I think the Jets were. They were kind of okay. I mean, they had like Chad Pennington or something. 2011, boom, they went to the Super Bowl and won. That was like their glory year, man. They beat the Patriots second time. So, I mean, yeah, it seems like we need the Jets or the Giants to be good again before we get wins a winner. And those seems years away.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, it's just more of the same, right? I mean, nothing. Who knows? We could have a miracle. We could have somebody, a change in the winds, if you will, for one of those football teams. I don't know. I've just gotten used to it. I honestly just shift gears. You know, let's go with House of the Dragon stuff. Give us Dunkin' Egg, and I'm cool. But the correlation though is pretty stunning.
It's interesting, actually. It's pretty interesting.
Right? Yeah.
Two of the books were released in years in which the New York Giants went to the Super Bowl. So, I mean, if that's literally what we have to wait for, then it's over.
It's over.
It's over. Because they don't seem like they're going anytime soon.
Right. So look at this. So October 17th, Sunday Sorrows. Matt, it's called Sunday Sorrows, October 17th. Well, at least the Jets did not lose this weekend. They had a bye. Like, that's how bad this is.
Wins well, is totally I don't know dependent. What's. I honestly don't know what's worse, the Jets or George's depression, because George at least says he's writing, and the Jets are terrible. I mean, let me explain something to you, Ez. Okay.
Yeah.
In my short life on this earth, you know, I'm 30. How old am I? 33, right? 32. Yep. I don't know.
You're Christ.
Do the math. I forgot. Yeah. Once you get past 30, you're just 30 something every year.
I'm in the year of Christ.
I mean, let me tell you something. The Jets, pretty much, I can tell you, I think have been good like 3 years of my life. Other than that, they've been pretty terrible. There was the two Mark Sanchez years, and there was like the 1 year Brett Favre was there. Okay. So let's just go ahead and discount them. So really, we got to root for the Giants because they've at least have a shot. All right. They're like they're pretty decent most of the time. They've been pretty awful now. It might be like 2018 before or 2018. 2018 already happened before. It might be 2028 before we get this book.
Right. Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. But thankfully, friends, we don't really need the books because we have the show. We have season eight. Okay.
Yep. Well, we have House of the Dragon, so we're good to go there.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. Well, there's your news. Winds of winter not coming any time soon. So, although didn't you see there was like a tweet or something where there was like
it said it was coming 2023. It was like per insider source and then listed nothing else. It was some of those clickbait websites. Wow. You know, we might need to start one of these clickbait websites because there seems to be a lot of money in it.
Yeah.
Because it appears first in Google search. You just say made up stuff and then it's just seems to be like you just make a bunch of money.
Yeah, people are searching for it. So they're like, yeah, well, you know, tell the people what they want to hear.
And I call Ez Captain. I call Ez Captain Clickbait. That's his nickname.
Yeah. Okay. I just wait for the once we get more of those House of the Dragon teasers or promo clips. Just my wait. God, just the thumbnails are going to be
the thumbnail game is insane. All right. Okay. As well, let's maybe we'll take. I know on YouTube it won't look like this way, but on the podcast we'll take a quick break for a message from one of our sponsors here, and then we'll dive right back in to the episode. So, okay, well, today's episode, as we are into Theon, Theon 6, I think? Yeah.
Yeah.
Theon 6 of A Clash of Kings. It's the final Theon chapter. And, this actually does go a little bit different than the show. Just mostly in the way that Ramsay interacts with Theon is actually kind of different, and the way sort of his men view him, but ultimately it's sort of the same outcome here. So Theon Greyjoy is approached by Maester Luwin, who advises him to yield. Victorian and Balon Greyjoy have not replied to his messages, and although Newburz will not reach them on time, Theon orders Luwin to send them anyway. He accuses Luwin of wanting him dead. The Maester calmly explains that although he bears Theon no great love, his order serves, and the fact that Theon holds Winterfell means that Luwin is bound to serve him. Again, he counsels Theon to yield Winterfell and take the Black. Theon counters this by that by holding onto Winterfell, Roger Cassell cannot turn south to take Victorian in the rear. He is willing to withstand a siege of a year, but Luwin tells him that within days the northern men will be climbing the walls in more places than Theon can stop them. Theon has his Ironborn assemble in the yard, and he informs his men he will not run, and gives them the option to leave or die beside him. None of his men reply until Wex Pike steps over to Theon's side. Lauren, Red Wolf, Crom, Werlog, Tymor, and his three brothers, Ulf the Ill, Harag Sharp, four Harlaws, and two Botleys, follow. The others leave. Black Lauren counsels him to put the castle folk to the sword, as they will turn on them as soon as the fighting begins. Garbed for battle, Theon climbs the watchtower and watches the Northmen who have gathered. Despite his disapproval of the plan, Lauren goes to fetch Beth Cassell. After Clay Kerwin announces Sir Roger Cassell's wish to parley with Theon, Theon goes to the drawbridge. He meets them in the market square, where Roger demands Theon return Winterfell to the Starks, commands his men to lay down their weapons, and allows himself to be judged by Robb Stark. Theon gives Roderick his own terms, telling the knight that the Northmen are to disperse and swear fealty to Balon Greyjoy as their king and Theon as the Prince of Winterfell. He then signals Lauren, who produces Roderick's daughter, Beth, with a noose around her neck atop the walls of Winterfell. When Roderick accuses Theon of being craven, Theon tells him that he felt the noose for 10 years. He declines Roderick's offer of taking his daughter's place, informing the knight that she will hang if the Northmen army are still present at sunset. Even following dawn and dusk, he says another hostage will follow. Theon returns to his castle and retreats to Eddard Stark's bedroom. He knows that the Northmen will attack Winterfell. The Northmen will attack, and Winterfell will easily fall. Finding no solace in wine, Theon takes his bow to the inner ward, where he loses shafts and archery butts. He sees no way out. If he hangs Beth, the northern army will attack at once, but if he does not hang her, he will prove his threats are empty. Luwin approaches him, suggesting him again to take the Black. Theon considers, realizing it is a way to live with dignity and honor. They are interrupted by Crom, who informs them that the men from the Dreadfort have arrived, who are now fighting Roderick's army. After the battle at Winterfell ends, the leader of the Dreadfort men presents Theon with the corpses of Roderick Cressel, Clay Kerwin, and Leobold Tarhalt, and Theon orders Winterfell's gates to be open to their new friends. The Dreadfort leader, Redhelm, informs Theon that Roderick thought the Dreadfort men were allies to other Northmen, which allowed the Dreadfort to win the battle, despite being outnumbered 5-1. He takes off his helm, and Theon identifies him as Reek. The man tells Theon that Reek is dead. His name is Ramsay Snow, although he prefers Ramsay Bolton. Well, here we go. Reek had been killed while fleeing the northern soldiers who had captured Ramsay, but as they had exchanged clothes, no one had realized the switch of identity. Ramsay tells Theon that he was promised a prize for bringing 200 men, but brought more than promised by bringing 600. Instead of Paula, he prefers Theon's bedwarmer, Kyra. When Theon objects, Ramsay punches Theon in the face and tells Theon, and Theon falls to the ground in pain. The Dreadfort men attack the Ironborn, and Theon sees Red Wolf, Keenid, Ulf, and Luwin die. While the roof of the stables are set aflame, Ramsay orders the man to save the phrase and burn the rest. Burn it all. Burn it all. The last thing Theon sees during the sack of Winterfell is his horse, Smiler, escaping the stables a fire, and then we will actually come back to what happens to Maester Luwin in a few chapters here. But as you know, a couple things I just kind of want to say first before we dive into like a lot of this chapter, just some things I think that actually kind of caught me. Just I was actually sort of thinking of some other characters and the surrounding events to this, and one of the characters I was thinking of is actually sort of Catelyn Tully, right? Catelyn Stark.
Yeah.
Here you have Roderick Cressel almost willing to let his daughter die in order to continue with what Robb wants to serve as king. And at the same time, we have Catelyn freeing Jaime to get her daughters back. And that is one area where I think that the show didn't really sort of do, like, you know, we see it with Rob where Rob's like, I can't believe what you just did. And it's a big deal. But you don't see it from a lot of the other smaller characters. I mean, it's a big deal. I mean, if you're another Northman, I mean, we've lost family too, trying mm-hmm. to capture the Lannisters. And it does get built up, and we ultimately see it, right? Because that's when John has to execute what's his name? Karstark.
Yeah.
Where John has to execute Karstark. But I mean, it's a pretty big deal. I mean, this is what we see them willing to do, and then Catelyn makes that trade, well, right? Or she thinks, for sure. hopes, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's kind of wild. She's in a position where she can do it, and so she does it. She's almost like she knows that it's going to be trouble for her with her son and his bannermen and so on, but she finds it worth doing. And then there's nothing that Sir Roderick can gain from this. I mean, like, Theon, what's done is done. He's going to kill her. He's not going to surrender. He can't really do that because, again, they'll just keep putting her in that same position or someone else. If you bring another force or whatever, and I don't know. It sucks. This is a sucky chapter because Theon does something pretty terrible here, but that's why I titled this thing Poor Beth, because she's up there with that noose around her neck, and I feel like... What Sir Roderick's just sitting there going like, what's he supposed to do? It is kind of interesting though. Theon does make a point that he also felt like he had for what 10 years had a noose around his neck. It was just one that couldn't be seen, right? But yeah, it's wild that this is kind of paralleling, what Catelyn does in a sense. Except for the stakes are a bit higher, right? She's still trying to save Arya and Sansa, and they're from a more from a higher family. They're from, they actually are Starks, but still, it's terrible, man.
Yeah.
It sucks.
It is. And it is. It's just, I don't know. It's just something I was sort of thinking about. Cause I was like, that's just not, a character. I think, we kind of forget about, man. The Cassells. Yeah. Roderick Cassell. Yeah,
it's sad. So Sir Roderick, I think he was when early on, oh gosh, he's Master at Arms, but he's talking to, what was her name? Because Ramsay gets her later on. I think he's looking for. Let me see if I can find it real quick. So during the closing banquet of the Harvest Fest, Beth is seated next to him, next to her father, Sir Roderick Cassell. He was talking about taking a wife, though, right? Wasn't he? He was talking about possibly being someone who could take Lady right. Horn. Is it what's her name? Lady Hornwell? I'm blanking on her name. Anyway, I'll find it here in a second. But yeah, he's a cool guy. I mean, I like him. I think he's, this is kind of a terrible end for his family, if you will. It's not. We haven't quite got to that yet. But Beth is, it's all gonna be revealed to us later here in a brand chapter. But yeah.
Yeah, we do have some comments here on YouTube. As I don't know if you can throw those on the screen here. Yeah. I'm going to try to pronounce this. Sifo-Lucili. I hope I'm pronouncing that correct. But here's a question. He says, what happens to old Nan after the sack of Winterfell? To be honest, it's never actually specifically said, although everything that happens is people say, I think she's probably dead. I think she's probably dead. So in A Storm of Swords, it claims that Ramsay took all the women and children from Winterfell to the Dreadfort. And then she could potentially be one of those. Then in A Feast of Crows, it says, Arya is kind of thinking about like some of the old Nan stories and thinks she's probably dead. And then in A Dance with Dragons, Theon thinks old Nan is probably dead, which to me tells me that old Nan is actually still 100% alive.
If you're still bringing old Nan up later.
If you're still bringing her up and being like, hey, she's still probably like, and you know, in all honesty, there's a character, by the way, that we know we keep talking about as like Howland Reed showing back up and maybe being the one to reveal John's parentage. Mm-hmm. We should do an old Nan episode at some point.
Yeah, we should.
Just be like, be like old Nan and Winds of Winterfell, because if she is still alive, she obviously could hold a huge amount of information. And we might be talking a little bit about old Nan. Actually, we already kind of had this queued up in Lady Sarah sent us a theory about Lady Rowan Weber, and haven't looked through that yet. But that's a very common sort of theory, is that she was Rohan Weber, who's in the Duncan Egg stories and stuff like that. So,
yeah. Yeah. Interesting. That's a great question. So real quick, just to kind of back up, I want to make sure I get this right. So Sir Roderick, it was Lady Hornwell. Hornwood, who shows up and he's possibly courting her as well as, several other individuals too. Manderly's there, Moore's, Umber, Tallheart, all of them. But it's at the Harvest Feast when that conversation kind of comes up. So, and she was recently widowed, and so we're hinting that, you know, there might be a chance for him to remarry. Roderick kind of explains to Bran that he's too old to provide security for Lady Danella. And anyway, so you have that kind of, you think there's going to be like a future for him, and that maybe there's this possible connection between him and Lady Hornwood, and that, you know, I mean, some terrible things happened to Lady Hornwood. Sir Roderick is killed, and his daughter is captured and taken to the Dreadfort. So it's just all around bad,
yeah,
right now for his family.
Okay, so back into the chapter here. Some of the things, you know, that are going on in this chapter. Let me get it pulled up here. So it kind of starts again. We went over some of this stuff. I don't need to sort of recap it again. But some characters, as you know, again, we sort of forget about some of these people. Wex Pike, man, right here in the beginning, and he sort of goes on to have some significance. It's always the small people, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so Wex Pike, right? He goes on. He's a mute, right? And he actually he's sort of a squire to Theon. But then he survived later in Dance of Dragons, right? He survives the sack of Winterfell, he climbs his heart tree, and he's the one that witnesses Bran and Rickon leaving, right? Which will happen here shortly. And then Lord Manderly sort of gets him, and he might be able to sort of communicate and tell them that they're alive, which could, you know. Well, he does.
Yeah.
He does sort of mm-hmm. reveal, sort of tell them that this is what's going on, that they're out there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an interesting piece, right? When you get into the Winds of Winter predictions on Rickon, and what was he supposed to be more important? Some of these things I think have just died. My God, I think some of these plot, I don't know if George is going to, what he's going to do with Rickon, and if Wick is going to, you know, be involved, and is Davos actually, because Davos is on that mission, right? Manderly is sent him out to kind of go find him, and that's one of their plays to take the north. But yeah, so that guy's around. He's a mute. He can still kind of he's learned his letters, and later on he'll be important. But yeah, he's still there. Let me just again back to Beth Cassell real quick. Matt, that's a you talk about characters you forget. She's captured, yeah. and to move forward, she will go to the Dreadfort, and she remains there. As I pulled up her page just to kind of like refresh my memory here, Arya over in Braavos calls herself Blind Beth, you know, and then you get people who are kind of like wondering like, okay, is there some connection between like, is Beth blind or blinded by, did something happen to her in the Dreadfort? Did Arya just sort of know her? Why come up with the name Blind Beth over in, I don't think I've ever uttered the phrase Blind Beth on this podcast, and now here I am like looking up theories on this and seeing what people have, you know, they're trying to assume about this character, and she's still alive. She's still someone at the Dreadfort that, like, where is she? Does George even remember that she's there, and is she going to come back and play a role? So, yeah.
Can I just read you something here?
Yes.
This is great. And this is one of these things too, where, you know, it's like, well, for starters, yes, there's a lot of characters we haven't spent a lot of time talking about, it cuz we haven't hit them in the chapters. But dude, let me just read some of this here. Theon stared at the flames over the rim of his wine goblet, brooding on the injustice of it all. I rode beside Robb Stark in the Whispering Wood, he muttered. He had been frightened that night, but not like this. It was one thing to go into battle surrounded by friends, and another to perish alone and despised. Mercy, he thought miserably. When the wine brought no solace, Theon set Wex to fetch his bow and took himself to his old inner ward. There he stood, loosening shaft after shaft at the archery butts until his shoulder ached and his fingers were bloody, pausing only long enough to pull the arrows from the targets from another round. I saved Bran's life with this bow, he reminded himself. Would that I could save my own. And it's just kind of interesting because... in the show, right? Mm-hmm. Well, what his sort of final act is protecting Bran with his bow in the Godswood, mm-hmm. right?
God. It's unreal. It's just unreal. Yeah. I mean, so it's like the show has bits and pieces of it, right? And George has given them enough that you can sort of see where maybe this will go. It just, whether it performs or is executed right or lands is another question, but yeah, that's wild. This redemption arc is crazy. I posted on the YouTube, who likes Theon, and really, right. We're not huge fans of Theon or the Theon chat. I'm not anyways, and I just kind of don't give them much thought or attention, but I feel like maybe I should as I go back through this reread, and I should look at more into these theories and maybe where his arc is going. But it just sucks, he's such a I don't know. He goes through a terrible, like we don't like him to begin with, and then we start to feel terrible for him. And then by the end, we're like almost like rooting for him in Winterfell with Ramsay, like do something, help people get out. Yeah, it's just, it's wild. Lady Shannon's on here and says, threw this up on here, I hate Theon, hate him. Wasn't a fan of the show attempting to redeem him. At the end of the day, he's a bad person.
A lot of people don't.
No, the realm speaks, man.
Yeah. Dude, and then we get to here too, man. And Theon is, it's odd. It's every time he gets close to making sort of a good decision, right? He just goes like something happens, he goes the wrong way, right? So a brother of the Night's Watch, it meant no crown, no sons, no wife, but it meant life and life with honor. Ned Stark's own brother had chosen the watch, and Jon Snow as well. I'll have black garb of plenty once I tear the krakens off. Even my horse is black. I could rise high in the watch, chief of rangers, even likely a lord commander. Let Asha keep the bloody islands, they're as dreary as she is. If I served Eastwatch, I could command my own ship, and there's fine hunting beyond the wall. As for women, what wildling woman wouldn't want a prince in her bed? A slow smile crept across his face. A black cloak can't be turned. I'll be as good as any man. Immediately, Prince Theon, the fighting's begun. And it's like, gosh, man, he almost just took the black, you know, and tried to redeem himself. And that's sort of his arc. That's sort of his character arc.
Yeah. Gosh, yeah. Of late, it seems to him that the very stones of Winterfell had turned against him.
Yeah.
That's what happens.
You know, if you, you know, I would say that honestly, actually, oddly enough, I would say that Theon's arc is actually sort of, let's just assume that it ends like it, like just a sort of, he does sort of get redemption and it does end good regardless of sort of how it happens. It doesn't happen exactly the same way as it does in the show. And that Jaime's arc, which is almost kind of the parallel to this, right? Actually their arcs are almost incredibly parallel to each other, like incredibly parallel. Mm-hmm. Jaime basically sort of gets pulled from his family and his birthright as potential Lord of Casterly Rock, and everything is taken away by the Mad King, right? Who, okay, he's going to be my Kingsguard. He does it as a slight to Tywin Lannister. And then Jaime and Theon both lose body parts, you know, slightly different body parts, right? But then it is sort of this redemption arc and they're going back and forth. Whereas Jaime, we actually kind of learn, you know, the things that we thought he did initially that were so terrible, he actually did kind of for good. Then he does obviously bad things. And then in the show, he sort of ends his whole thing by going back to Cersei, whereas Theon kind of does come full circle and ends up back as a Stark. But whose arc as do you think is more, I don't know. Do you see that though? Do you think the parallel between them is
Yeah, for sure. They're definitely like, you know, these characters
they're
that
incredibly
George
similar.
Of, yeah, and they're just characters that George makes us love and hate, right? They I think for the most part, like, we get frustrated with Sansa sometimes, but we overall we really like her. Jon Snow makes mistakes, but we really like him. Dany, same type of thing. But these are characters. Then you throw in these individuals with actual point of view chapters where we don't like them. We don't like them at first. They're bad guys. They're pushing Bran out the window. They're fake killing Bran, taking, you know, the title Prince of Winterfell, and then kind of go through, as you say, this redemption arc where we're in. We're locked back in on him. So, I mean, the arc I like more is Jaime's. The only thing I will say during season 8, when Theon did, I mean, that moment I was like, okay, all right. Like, if this lands in the, like, if we start to see like an uptick in his arc and him reclaiming his name, fighting in the Godswood and in the Weirwoods, calling, whispering Theon instead of Reek, and he comes back, baby, I'm gonna be like, all right, I will eat crow. I will eat crow, because I mean, gosh, yeah.
Lady Shannon saying here, Rob treated him like a brother. He betrayed him. He wasn't treated poorly. At Winterfell, he chooses to destroy everything and everyone there. Why? He is so frustrating. Sure, he didn't really kill Bran and Rickon, but that's only because he couldn't find them.
Wow.
Yeah. No, don't get me wrong. What Theon does, you could almost argue, I don't know, what Theon does is worse than anything Jaime does, because Jaime potentially killing Bran, let's say, like, you know, he pushes him out a window. It's way different to kill somebody from an opposing house than it is to kill somebody who you were raised with as like a brother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And actually, that's something. So as you say, that Lady Shannon just kind of threw in here. Yeah, Rob treated him like a brother. He betrayed him. He wasn't treated poorly at Winterfell. He chooses to destroy everything and everyone there. Why? He's so frustrating. Yeah, I mean, actually, okay, there's a couple of points where you feel sorry for him, too, because when he goes back to his father, they both have issues with their father, right? Jaime and Theon. Tywin is just frustrated with the choice that his son has made, even though, you know, he's in the Kingsguard and so on. He wants him to be, you know, to rule and take his position at Casterly Rock. But Theon, it's like he goes back to try to get some of that from his father and to be that for his father, right? To be his heir. And he's shunned. He's sort of like belittled. Asha is it, right? That's she's sort of gonna be next. Well, I mean, she, you know, is sort of in that role. So it just sucks. I mean, he's because I feel bad for him there, right? I feel bad for him in that moment, but then he goes and does this, and I can't get behind him.
So. Yeah. It's kind of a weird little passage here. As some of the fighting is going on, says Black Loren appeared beside him and stood silently for a time. The sun was low in the west, painting the fields and houses all a glowing red. A thin, wavering cry of pain drifted over the walls, and a war horn sounded off beyond the burning houses. Theon watched a wounded man drag himself painfully across the ground, smearing his life's blood in the dirt as he struggled to reach the well that stood at the center of the market square. He died before he got there. He wore a leather jerkin and a conical half helm, but no badge to tell which side he'd fought on. The crows came in the blue dusk with the evening stars. The Dothraki believe the stars are spirits of the valiant dead, Theon said. Maester Luwin had told him that long ago, a long time ago. Dothraki, the horse lords across the narrow sea. Oh, them. Black Loren frowned through his beard. Savages believe all manner of foolish things. As the night grew darker and the smoke spread, it was harder to make out what was happening below, but the din of steel gradually diminished to nothing, and the shouts and war horns gave way to moans and Pytus wailing. So then it just goes on, but it's just kind of weird. I don't know. I just find that sort of interesting that we get this like totally odd Dothraki reference. It's just one of those things that you'll kind of notice every so often that George does where he weaves something in, and then, you know, this, we've all torn it to absolute pieces and we use it to talk about what people think about the Dothraki. Because anytime you go to anybody's page on the wiki, you can see like, oh, I've had thoughts on this or this or this, or you click on a specific thing and it'll talk about like, well, Jamie said this about the Dothraki, or, you know, whatever, Ghost of High Heart, any of that stuff. And it's just one of those things, and it just kind of stood out to me. Really isn't needed like at all in the sort of passage, but it's just another.
So it's just what he
does it. He does it because it adds context to like 15 other things.
Yeah, spins us in circles is what he does. He's trying to get us to look one way while he shoves something else under the carpet or whatever. So we do have a good comment here though, right? So is this, and I'm gonna butcher it.
It's not Sypho. He gave
Sypho Diaz.
I know, that's what I was. That's what I was thinking.
Master.
He says pronounced Seapour. S, yeah. Like S E A P O U R, but it's spelled in S. He's from South Africa. I love this comment.
So yes. Basically, we're talking about Jamie and Theon, who's worse, etc. And the comment indicates that Jamie is worse than Theon. The Kingslayer tried to preserve a moment's pleasure by pushing Bran out of the window, whilst Theon was reacting to a lifelong issue of feeling insignificant.
Yeah.
I mean, the things you do for love. That's true. Matt.
Hey, that is true too. There is perfect pronunciation. Okay. Oh, then. Okay. Yeah. I don't know, man. It is kind of tough, I think, to choose between them because they are two totally. I guess it really comes down to what do you think more. I guess for me, I think more. I don't know. I think I'm on the other side. I think what Theon does is worse because. I think I could put myself in both sets of shoes, right? You put yourself in both sets of shoes. If you're Jaime Lannister, it's easier. I mean, again, you are just totally disregarding this kid's life. I mean, but he's a member of an opposing house. He catches you in an act, you know, to put yourself inside of even the Song of Ice and Fire world and the types of things these people would do. I think it would be more difficult. Like even Jaime, I think would have Jaime protects Tyrion. So I think like Jaime would have a much more difficult time, you know, potentially killing, say, Tyrion to protect himself. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's tough. George puts us in this position where, you know, there's times we like them. There's times we don't. We kind of see why they do what they do. I mean, the killing of the Miller's boys is pretty terrible. But
yeah, Lady Shannon just said that. Yeah, isn't there a theory that the Miller boys that Theon kills instead of the Stark boys are actually his own? Yeah, there is. I don't know that Theon necessarily knows that. We actually did we did that I think in one of the more recent Theon episodes as a Raven. But yeah, and actually I think we'd have a YouTube video on it as well. But yes, there is a theory though, because Theon talks about hooking up with, or whatever, however you want to call it, excuse me, with the Miller's wife, and then potentially, yeah, that those kids could be his.
Right. I think there's a point in time where people talk about kinslaying, right? And you've got Theon's confronted by the hooded man in Winterfell. Is it a ghost? The ghost in Winterfell, or whatever? And this kind of comes up as to, you know, maybe he, like, I think he's called a kinslayer, or something. He's cursed in some way, and then, yeah, he's called a turncloak and a kinslayer. So that's where people are like, well, why is he called a kinslayer? Who is it? Because he fought against the Starks, or is it because he killed the Miller's boys and they happen to be his children too? So yeah, good call.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. So the rest of the chapter, as we keep kind of going here, is we learn who those people were that were fighting outside the gate, and it is now And here's sort of the official. Go ahead. I'll say the official entrance of our next Joffrey is Ramsay Snow, Ramsay Bolton.
I call him Ramsay Snow. I'll never give him the title Bolton. He don't deserve it. But really, though, how like they're actually outnumbered? What's he get? Like 500 soldiers? He promised to. Who's going to get a prize? The prize that was promised. Whatever.
Right.
But yeah, they totally think that the Dreadfort men are with them, but Sir Roderick, he's out. They have him outnumbered 5-1, I think. And still, Ramsay's men were able to beat this other force because of surprise, I guess, or whatever. So we don't really have any details on that battle right outside the walls of Winterfell, but I'm like, I think somewhere it says that they had them outnumbered 5-1 and still the Bolton men were successful, unless I got that wrong and it's flipped. But I thought that was the case. Anyway, just interesting tidbit, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then that's really kind of it, really. Burn it all, man. That's what Ramsay says.
Burn it.
Burn it all, which obviously the Mad King says. So, you know, you have to think about that, too. The last thing Theon Greyjoy saw was the Smiler kicking free and burning stables with a mane, with his mane ablaze, screaming, rearing.
Smiler.
The horse.
The horse, right?
Yeah.
Is there a connection? Is there a theory?
There's always a connection. Right. And that's the last Theon chapter we have until, actually, for a while, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because he's not Theon anymore.
I think he still has one more Theon. I think he has a few more Theon chapters, doesn't he?
No, it doesn't. Yeah, before he turns into good old Reek. Just another mention here, too. There is a lot of flame. There's a lot of flames. A lot of looking into flames, actually, in this chapter, even though we don't get any interpretation of it. But I thought that was kind of interesting as well.
Let me see here. Yeah, so when is the next Theon chapter? Not till a Feast of Crows?
Hopefully not for a while. Let me go look. Sorry. I know people hate. Hey, I'm sorry. I'm hating on Theon and stuff. But, guys, I just...
He doesn't have another chapter himself until Reek 1, A Dance with Dragons. There's not a POV chapter until A Dance with Dragons.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, that's good.
Ez hates the Ironborn.
I have nothing to say about him. You know, I don't. What's dead may never die, and the Iron Way, the Iron Price. You know, that's
right.
That's all there is to him.
Yeah. So. Okay. All right, Wes. Let's move on over to our Raven here. So this comes to us from our good friend Lady Sarah. So here we go. It is a Lady Rohan Weber. So Lady Rohan disappears under mysterious circumstances in 230 AC, less than a year after giving birth to Jason Lannister, her fourth son with Lord Gerald Lannister. Hello, good sirs. Lady Rohan Weber seems to have spun a few webs in her time. She is a prime example of a woman trying to carve her own path in a world not built for her. The questions surrounding her are infinite, so let's get started. What if the actual motive for marrying Sir Eustace, which is Sir Eustace Osgray, right, was more than a young woman following the wishes of a dead father in order to keep her castle and titles? What if she married the old man with a plan in mind? She had love for his son, Adam, when they were children. From the tender age of 10, she'd been forced to repeatedly marry time and time again. What if, in order to keep the castle from going to her male cousin, she hatched a plan of her own to keep that from ever happening? For being only 5 and 20, she had been married 4 times by the time she wed Sir Eustace after the dam/fire drama that we see in the second of the Duncan Egg books, which is the Sworn Sword. The information about her time with Sir Eustace is lacking. However, we do know that she eventually goes on to marry a 6th husband, ultimately. Her 5th husband, Sir Eustace, eventually dies somewhere between 211 and 219, which is around the time that old Nan is allegedly born. After his death, she went on to marry none other than Lord Gerald Lannister, who was not a good guy at all. To be specific, she gave birth to 4 sons with him. Tywin and Joanna are her grandchildren, and there does seem to be a few similarities between Cersei and her. Fire and green eyes, to be specific. If theories are true in regards to old Nan being Lady Webber, she'd be around 120-some years old when we see her telling stories to Bran. So what went on between her disappearance in 230 AC and potentially winding up in Winterfell? Is Sir Duncan the Tall the connective tissue that links these links her to those events and places? The exact year Sir Duncan joined the Kingsguard is still unknown. It's first mentioned the first year mentioned is 236 AC. That would be 6 years after Lady Rohan's disappearance, after the suspicious deaths of both his brother and niece, both rulers of Casterly Rock ahead of him. Gerald becomes Lord of Casterly Rock. His reputation was questionable, and whispers of kinslaying followed him to 230 AC when Lady Rohan Lannister went missing. In A Song of Ice and Fire, you're either dead or mostly dead. Was this death/disappearance faked? This was a highly intelligent and intuitive woman who had been married to a monster like Lord Gerald. It just doesn't seem fitting for her. If Gerald did not have a hand in her disappearance, then what would make a woman leave her 4 sons, including a newborn? There isn't much in life that would cause a parent to separate from their children. However, we see this with Rhaegar Targaryen and his Martell children. Something caused him to put aside Elia and their 2 small children for Lyanna. Why? What cause could be so dire that so many people leave behind their southern lives to start a new one up in the north? If she is not old Nan, it's a pretty bleak ending for such an enticing and fascinating character. At Casterly Rock, years later, the widowed daughter-in-law of Lord Gerald's, who bore no love towards him, named her daughter Rohan with Lord Waldern Tarbeck. Curious still is that Hodor's real name is Walder. Apparently, the West remembers. Full tinfoil hat theory here would be that Lady Rohan Webber, after Sir Eustace's death, left Coldmoat and had another woman in her place marry Lord Gerald. Imagine a scenario like Jean Poole's. She was lucky enough to marry Ramsay Bolton Snow and got to be a Stark. We see this type of mirror image from the time to time with George. Lady Webber either went on to marry Lord Gerald herself and suffered a terrible death at his hands, or she had a hand in her own disappearance and left the West for good. That or some unfortunate soul got Jean pooled. If old Nan is Lady Rohan Webber, what force was powerful enough for her to get her to the Western lands and all the way to Winterfell? The people surrounding/protecting Bran are in his life for a reason. Old Nan is no exception, especially with the stories and knowledge she passes down to him. Did someone have a hand or an eye in this? I believe the keys to unlocking A Song of Ice and Fire are laying under a doormat somewhere in the Duncan Egg Tales. Amen. First of all, Summerhall, the dead beyond the wall, as well as the mysteries surrounding so many characters and Ashai by the shadow. What remains clear is that Lady Webber never had affection for any of her husbands. She reserved them for Adam in her youth and Sir Duncan in adulthood. Whatever drove her to marrying Gerald Lannister is a mystery, but it seems as though the reason for marrying Sir Eustace is clear. He was old and she had little time to secure her castle and lands, so why not him? Why not have Adam's father back at Coldmoat, where House Osgray once ruled? Why? Freedom. She could leave Coldmoat as she pleased until she's betrothed to Gerald Lannister. Once he was dead, without worrying about it being passed to her cousin or whoever else, she would head north if she wanted. 1,000 Eyes in 1, Lady Sarah, the Unraveler. And then she does even give us a few just sort of notes here, just sort of for us, that sort of show some interesting sort of things here. Lady Webber, potentially born in 185 AC, disappears in 230 AC.
Yeah. Man, this is cool. This is actually awesome. So shout out to Lady Sarah for this, because it's cool. You never thought about the idea that we'd have a Jane Poole situation, right? Like, actually, maybe right. The Lady Webber who marries a Lannister is not really her, right? Maybe she actually has some, right. whether she leaves and it's a mystery, and the Lannisters have enough power and influence to kind of say, yeah, let's put one of our own people in there and call her Lady Webber, just like they do with Jane Poole and Arya Stark. Like, that's kind of wild. But then you run the risk, right, of just like the Boltons do. If someone else comes forward and says, no, I'm actually Arya, well, you know, just call that person a liar or what have you. But she disappears. I mean, unless you really recognize, unless it's someone who looks really similar to Lady Webber, then by God, it could work. Or there's something more going on, and maybe she was actually married to Gerald Lannister, and he is an evil dude, and she gets out of there somehow, right?
Yeah, it's yeah, man, it is crazy. It is crazy to think about. I don't know. I've definitely been on the case more than I do believe she is old Nan. I definitely think that's by far the most likely situation. Although what Lady Sarah brings up for me that actually almost now confirms it is, man, maybe the idea that she didn't marry Gerald Lannister, obviously, because then whatever, supposed to Lady Runweb is supposed to die there or disappear, right? And that she does send somebody else. Because remember, a lot of these people, especially when we meet Lady Rowan Webber in The Sworn Sword, she lives like really kind of in the middle of nowhere, to be entirely honest, in like the Reach. And it's like these we're talking about tiny houses, right? Of like 12 people. You know, that's who you preside over. It's like, you know, it's like basically being the mayor of, like, you know, I don't know. It has to be like being the mayor of Brandon, right? You know, it's a tiny little town outside where we grew up, and it's like three houses. Blink and you miss it, right? I mean, that's basically kind of what it's, you know, what it's like. I mean, I think Ez is actually practically the mayor of Bangs, Ohio. I mean,
dang straight. I got lands. We got cattle. We got some crops. You know, I mean, right. I'm on neighborhood watch.
Right. It's like one street. You know, just little cul-de-sac, basically. Because that's basically what kind of is, because some of these people, even like Dunk, you know, Dunk's traveled around. I mean, he's a hedge knight, and he's like never even heard of this person, and he's never met them. So it's definitely possible that even Gerald Lannister has no idea who she is. Mm-hmm. So you could easily tell one of your handmaidens or whatever your plan and say, I mean, imagine you go to just some sort of like, you know, pretty farm girl or whatever, and you say, I've got a plan. Do you want to get out of your situation, which is being a farm girl in the middle of, I mean, absolutely nowhere, right? And remember, this is like medieval setting, right? I mean, there's disease, famine. You can go serve as basically a lady in the court. It'd be incredibly easy to have somebody play that off.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean,
it's not also, like we have Facebook to look up their profile pictures and stuff. I mean, it's just like some people that it's like they don't travel there. This is in a different region too. I mean, he's in the Westerlands. He's not in the Reach.
Right. Yeah. I think the biggest thing too is when you hear you think of her being this widow who's had multiple husbands, outlives all of them, and then you flash to old Nan talking about all these different, you know, past, you know, being super old, and it's the needles, right? It's the needlework too, like click clack or whatever, of the needles that represents maybe the sound of a spider, or just sort of like doing web work with her needles, and people are making a connection back to, yeah, Lady Webber. So it's that to me was always one of the cooler connections. That's why people even and Dunk and Hodor and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I mean, I feel like she is the most likely candidate to be old Nan, and or related to her or what have you. But how did she get there? What moves her away from the Lannisters? Does it happen prior to Gerald Lannister or afterwards or whatever? I think is going to be fascinating. Do you think we're going to get the answer? You think we're going to get an answer to that in the Dunkin' Egg series? Or
yes. Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely. To me, it seems like Dunk is just always going to have a handful of ladies that he's interested in. Because that's what it seems like. It seems like Dunk, obviously, well, we know Dunk gets around a little bit because he's obviously into, well, because he hooks up with, obviously with whoever Bran of Tarth, you know, I mean, somewhere he's involved in that line. We know that that's sort of official by George. So you have that line that he's
Tanzel.
Right. I do think he will meet with Tanzel too tall at some point. And then Lady Rowan Weber, he's going to get with her too.
So. I think there's a few more coming down the line.
Oh,
I
mean, he's just ahead tonight. Well, what's his name is potentially an heir of Dunk at the wall. What's his name?
Oh God. Yeah. What is his name? Big old guy. Yeah.
We did a whole thing on him.
Yeah.
God, what is it? We did a whole.
Yeah. I'll look him up here.
Yeah. He's in the opening chapter. Oh man. What is his name?
Something.
Paul? People are shouting. Small Paul. Right,
there he is. Yep.
Small Paul. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I think it would be, I do want more. I want more on Dunk and Egg. I want more on the connection to Old Nan. And it's funny that this came up today in this chapter that we have. What did happen to Old Nan? Where's she at? Is she still alive?
This is where it would be. Something would happen.
Right. Exactly. So she'll come back and reveal who knows what. I mean, think about that too, as you project forward in the story. We're at Winterfell. Theon's there. Like, characters show back up at Winterfell, and where is Old Nan?
Right.
Why is she not ever brought up in discuss? I don't know. So,
well, she might be at the Dreadfort because they take the women.
Yeah, she could be. I just think it's like, why not? They killed a bunch of other people. I mean, they did take Beth Cassell there. So, yeah. I hope she's still around. Hal and Reed situation. The power of Hal and Reed. Old Nan has that power. She's referenced all the freaking time. So, she knows stuff. All right?
She does. Interesting. Awesome. All right. As well, I think actually we're looking pretty good here on YouTube, too, to possibly wrap this up. This was fun. I like doing it when we go live, to do it live, because then we get comments as we're doing it here. It's always fun. So thank you, Lady Sarah, for that great raven there. So all right, guys, well, that was sort of it, right?
It's different for anybody
who watches this here shortly, if you're a Bannerman, we are doing our Bannerman hangout here in a bit. So we'll be doing that and doing a hangout over on Patreon. So be sure to check that out. That was always a lot of fun.
They're a lot of fun.
We travel to the White Claw, you know?
Yeah, we do. And we're about to, honestly, I've been doing some low carb stuff and working out. I'm feeling a large pizza coming on.
Wow.
I'm feeling like a large pizza at the end of the show. Cause I don't know what it is. Like, we did this live show and you guys can probably tell from this episode, like, Sir Ezra's a little bit like, there's so much going on. I feel like my kid. Also, I felt off this whole episode because if you look at the screen, I'm on the left.
Right.
I'm never on the left.
I know.
I hate this right now.
It's weird.
And it's honestly
Can you move them? Can you move them on the thing?
I don't know. I'm going to figure it out after the show because it's bothered me so much that I've actually been distracted by it and I haven't been able to get my thoughts straight. And I'm like stuttering and stumbling through. So I deserve this large pizza that's coming. So
awesome.
Just want to say that.
All right. Awesome. All right, guys. Well, hey, thank you for hanging out. Thank you for those Lady Shannon, Ryan Seapor. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that right, man. It's spelled Sypho. So
Diaz.
Sypho Diaz. Right. That's right. yeah. So awesome. All right, guys. Be sure to hang out. Check us out over on our other podcast as well. Wheel of Time is firing up. So we just did an episode breaking down all the trailers and stuff. So check that out.
Yeah, that's out. Yeah, footage. Yep.
Yeah. Check that out. We might have some more of the Matt and Ez show coming this weekend, maybe.
Yeah.
We watched Squid Game and it's like, wow.
Holy smokes. Okay. Yeah, that's insane. If you haven't, be careful. Trigger warnings on all that Squid Game stuff, but we're going to be talking about that on the Matt and Ez show. That and Dune and some other things.
Yeah, let me tell you. My new favorite house might be House Atreides, okay? Because Dune was awesome.
Yeah. It was awesome.
Yeah. Now I'm like, all right, I need to go read the books and I got to watch the old movie. It's got Sting in and Patrick Stewart. I'm going to have to go check it out. I basically went into Dune blind.
Me too.
And I was like,
yeah.
this where's part two, because I'm ready. Like it was it. Well, just a quick little tease here, because we might do a full full talk about it. As it might be one of the most, because it's part of the Warner Brothers network, right? It was on HBO Max, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Ez and I are both shareholders, okay, of Warner Brothers through AT&T, right? This is our bread and butter. Right. We love it.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah, man, I got to say, it was a hit. It might honestly be the one of the prettiest, like, it's like this gorgeous movie. It takes place in the desert. The CGI is freaking awesome.
Yeah, it's phenomenal.
You know, the cast is insane. I'm like, oh, my God, man. It's like you got Jason, you got Jason Momoa, who's Aquaman. You got Poe Dameron and Oscar Isaac. You've got Brolin, right? Josh Brolin, who's Thanos. You got Batista, who's Drax in the Marvel thing. You got, I don't know what his name is, but he's Bootstrap Bill Turner and Pirates of the Caribbean. Yeah. I mean, it was like, wow, this cast is insane. It's got the girl from the Spider-Man movies. It's awesome.
It's sick. It's cool. If you guys haven't had a chance to see it, that's really good. Skip Squid Game just because
don't
of the trigger
skip
warning
Squid
there.
Game. Watch it too, but just be
careful.
Not for the faint of heart. But if you've been through the Red Wedding, you can handle Squid Game.
Okay, good point. Yeah, that's true.
So awesome. Geez. All right, guys. Hey, well, with that, I want to thank you for listening. Thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. Our next episode will be Chapter 67, Tyrion 15.
If you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write that review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com.
We will see you next week. And remember that winter.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.